I think it all starts with intention. Sometimes I'll meet people at a conference, like we recently bumped into each other, and I'll ask somebody, hey, what are you reading? And they'll tell me, and I'll say, why? I really think that we do need to define our intention for each book that we read.
I'm here today with the amazing Nick Hutchison. He's the visionary behind Book Thinkers.
Read as many books as possible in as many different areas of personal development and business and health and relationships and philosophy and psychology. I mean, read everything. So many people just decide to jump into a book. They don't have an intention. They don't have a goal. They just jump right in. I say, let's build the SMART goal.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with the amazing Nick Hutchison. Nick, what's happening, man?
Ben, I am excited to be here. Can I ask you the first question today?
Rock and roll. Go for it.
What is your favorite book from the last 12 months?
From the last 12 months?
Yeah, in the last year, what's the best book that you've read? I always love to kick things off there because books change lives, man. I want to know what you're reading.
Oh my God, that's such a difficult question. Picking just one's a difficult question, especially because I don't have my Kindle in front of me. One of my favorite books of the past year is, I was late to the game, but I recently read Limitless by Jim Quick, and just off the charts. I mean, I kind of was annoyed because he teaches speed reading, but he didn't start teaching speed reading till halfway through. So it took me a while to get to that point and then I could read faster. But, you know, his focus on mindset, his focus on, you know, we can't control external circumstances, but we can control how we react to it. And we can control how we micro learn how to learn. So have you read Limitless by Jim Quick? It's a good one.
I have, yes. Jim was actually, I want to say he was guest number 3 on my podcast or something like that. So I read it right around the same time that it came out. And yeah, really big fan of his. And I love that subject, right? It's very aligned with sort of everything that I'm teaching as well, learning how to learn and being a more efficient consumer of information.
And if I were to give you a number 2, it would be Rise of the Reader by my boy, Nick. That's such a great book. Your book just came out, man. That's kick butt.
Yeah, listen, it took me years to write. I have so much more respect for the authors that I work with professionally. I think that because I'm a disciplined person in most other areas of my life, I thought, okay, I could sit down and write a book. I mean, that's not so hard. I've read hundreds of them, but it kicked my butt. 3 years working on this thing, but I'm so happy that it's finally out.
And we're going to dive right into the meat of it in just a moment. But I got to ask you the question you just asked me, man. It's, and you can give me 2 or 3 if you need to, but looking at 2023, as we come to an end here, what are some of your favorite books you've read this year?
I'm actively going through what's quickly becoming one of them, if that sentence made sense, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger's new book. It's all about being useful. And that's one of my favorite things to be, is to be useful, to get the most out of my day-to-day, to not live a life of regret, to take action. And he reinforces that through, I think there's 7 major lessons in the book, but the core concept here is just to be useful. And when I think about Arnold Schwarzenegger, yes, there are some blemishes in his career here and there, you know, sort of like off camera in his family life, but he has the highest dream to reality ratio that I've ever seen. He grew up in a house in rural Austria that had no running water, and he had to use an outhouse. And then he becomes the world's most successful bodybuilder. Then he becomes the world's most successful actor. He's a successful businessman. And then he runs one of the sort of standalone biggest economies in the world, California. And so I think about Arnold and I think about possibility and dreams coming true. And it's really cool to go through the book and think about it that way.
I love this. When's he coming on your podcast, brother?
Oh, I've made a few attempts. I should probably try a little bit harder. He's He's somebody that I'd love to interview, but no response yet.
Hey, man, I love to banter with you, but we got to introduce you to the listeners. So I'll quickly read a short bio, introduce you, and then I want to kind of get into the story behind the story in a moment here. But Nick, he's the visionary behind Book Thinkers, hence the talk about books today, a flourishing platform and community that bridges the gap between authors and readers in the personal development domain. Book Thinkers podcast has had pretty much anyone you can imagine on: Grant Cardone, Guy Raz, Alex Hormozi, Vanessa Van Edwards, Patrick Bet David, Ryan Holiday, just to name a few of my favorites, but plenty more. And you really kind of delve deep into intellectual mastery, and especially in your latest book, Rise of the Reader, which just came out. I just devoured. And we'll talk about that too, because that was kick butt as well, man. So the real question is, though, because that's a bio and it took you a while to get there. It's not like you rolled out of bed with this brilliancy and this platform and all this social proof and all this growth. Like, where'd you get started, man?
Well, what might surprise anybody that can see my background today, which is a real background, we were sort of joking about it before, is, and maybe if you're just audio only, I have like 1,000 books behind me, is that I was not much of a reader growing up. I was more of the athlete stereotype, not really much of the academic. You couldn't pay me to read a book through middle school or high school. And that behavior continued into my college experience. So I went to business school, and going into my senior year, I decided to take an internship at a local software company. I wanted to work for somebody else, get a little bit of experience in the world of tech sales. And so I'm early into this internship experience, and my boss, Kyle, he says to me one day, "Hey, Nick, I sort of feel like you're living under your potential here. You're acting like a know-it-all. You've got a little bit of an ego. Sure, you can communicate, but I think you could do a little bit better if you decided to listen to podcasts." And so I was commuting about an hour each way, so 5 days a week, 10 hours in the car, and I was just listening to music and the radio. Kyle said, "Hey, listen, these podcasts, they could change your life. The music probably can't." And so I started listening to podcasts. And what I quickly realized was that so many of the successful people that were being interviewed, they gave at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. Mm-hmm. Foundational success. And I thought, well, if I'm deliberately choosing not to read these books, then I'm also deliberately choosing to live under my potential, and nobody wants that. So I went to my local Barnes & Noble, sort of like list in hand, right? All the books that I'd heard about so many times on these interviews, and I grabbed about 10 books, and I have not looked back ever since. It's been about, I don't know, 10 years of reading, and I've just read and implemented hundreds and hundreds of books, because they solve almost any problem that you can come up with, and they help you develop almost any skill that you want to implement. And so I just think they're the best things in the world. And that's sort of my origin story, if you will.
I love it. I love it. You started a similar origin story with me, like mobile university. You're in the car. You might as well consume these books, these podcasts on the go. Then you started reading. And I think a key here that I want you to double down on, because I've learned this from you, and this wasn't where I was when I began. Let's talk about when I began reading. It was infotainment. It made me feel good. I was rah, rah. It made me feel like I was healthier. It made me feel smarter. It made me intellectualize. But it's kind of hard to talk about, but I started to have a lot of shame and imposter syndrome because I had the answer to questions, but my life wasn't in alignment with that answer. So I'd want to speak up and talk about health, but I was unhealthy and I was just in a bad place. And you're all about the implementation of this knowledge. Talk a little bit about why the implementation is so important. It's not just infotainment.
Well, on the date that we're recording this, I noticed today that my team posted the book Think and Grow Rich to our Instagram channel. And one of my favorite quotes about this subject comes from Napoleon Hill. He says, quote, "Action is the real measure of intelligence." Action. That's where all of the magic happens. What's the difference between where you are today and where you'd like to be in life? It's not simply reading the book. It's reading and implementing the book. That's what makes the difference. And so I believe in the implementation of this material. And as I continue, I started my community, Book Thinkers, and posting book reviews online. And as it continued to grow, I received hundreds and hundreds of the same questions. So I realized that most, they were all about the implementation of material. So I realized that this is something that a lot of people struggle with. And you know what was interesting about my journey, and I haven't talked about this much, but when I was working for that software company, I continued with them after that internship with a full-time position, is I would sell software to a company, and then they would spend anywhere from a few weeks to a few months implementing that software. Now, that was right around the same time that I started reading these books. And I think what happened was I naturally mimicked that implementation process with the books I was reading. I would read something, and then I would spend a few weeks or a few months implementing it, like becoming a human guinea pig and trying to work out this information. And maybe some of that credit also goes to Tim Ferriss, because I fell in love with his podcast around that same time. So I think that's why I started to implement information, but clearly most people struggle with this, and that's okay. We're not taught in the traditional public education system how to implement books on self-care and fitness and health and personal finance. And for some reason, they choose to leave that out. That's a whole nother rabbit hole that we could go into. But you might have to ask me your question one more time, because I just got excited and I just started talking about why I care so much about action.
I just think it's amazing that you're an action taker. And the real question is, how can we become implementers and actually integrate this into our life? I know you start the book with it, and I think it's a great starting point, like just understanding your intention in the first place. So start with intention, and then we'll move into how we implement as we go.
Absolutely. Well, you're totally right. I think it all starts with intention. Sometimes I'll meet people at a conference, like we recently bumped into each other, and I'll ask somebody, hey, what are you reading? And they'll tell me, and I'll say, why? And then I'm met with a blank stare, like, what do you mean, why? I saw this book on Instagram, or this is a bestseller, whatever the case is. I really think that we do need to define our intention for each book that we read. And I actually like to use the SMART goal framework when reading a book. So I like to set a SMART goal for each book that I read. We can use Alex Hormozy's newest book as an example. I think you were wearing an acquisition.com hat.
I still haven't read the book, but I got the three copies and a hat during his launch. So yeah.
Well, you can use the following strategy, I suppose. We can use $100 million leads then for 100%. This example. So many people just decide to jump into a book. They don't have an intention. They don't have a goal. They just jump right in. I say, let's build the SMART goal. So for anybody that's not familiar with the acronym, I'll run through it quickly one more time. So S stands for specific. Your goal needs to be specific. Specificity wins. M stands for measurable. You need to set a measurable goal so that you know whether or not you've achieved the goal. The legendary management guru Peter Drucker would say that what's not being measured can't be managed. So we need to be measurable. A stands for attainable. You need to set a realistic goal. In the case of $100 million leads, it's not make $100 million. That's not an attainable goal, right? But we'll talk about something that is in a minute. Sure. R stands for relevant. You need to be emotionally connected to the goal that you have for the book. Otherwise, it'll be boring. You're not connected to it, and it'll just kind of slip off into the abyss. You won't remember the information either. And then T stands for time bound. So you want to give yourself a deadline for implementing the information and taking action. So you're baking that action right into the beginning. So a good SMART goal for something like $100 million leads by Alex Hormozy could be find and implement action. So find and implement at least 2 lead generation mechanisms into my business, Book Thinkers, by the end of November. So that's specific, it's measurable, 2. I know whether or not I did it. It's attainable. It's a realistic goal. It's just implementing 2 things. I'm emotionally connected because, quite frankly, my agency stinks at lead generation. And then time-bound, I said by the end of November. So what I'll do typically with that intention, once I define it, is I'll write it on the inside cover of the book. And I'll read it each and every time I read a few more pages of the book so that I tell my brain what to filter for. Like, let's go out and find these actionable things to implement and use in our lives. And it's a very important part of the process. Whereas I think reading without intention is toxic because, again, it's infotainment. It's exciting, but it's closer to entertainment than it is education if you read without intention.
I've never heard reading and toxic in the same sentence, brother. Oh my gosh. It's better than some toxins, but it's you're wasting your time if you're not really getting the full value out of it, right?
Right. Yeah. And listen, there are so many benefits to reading fiction, and there are benefits to reading in general. I think reading is better than a number of other things you could be doing or consuming. But there's an opportunity cost to reading a book like $100 Million Leads without setting an intention, because that book has the potential to change your life as a business owner, as a service provider. And if you choose not to use the intention piece, you're leaving something on the table. At least I believe that.
I don't know if it was in the book or in a YouTube video, but you gave this example of like studying how to cook chicken parm, but never actually cooking the chicken parm. It seems silly buying a cookbook and just treating it as ingredient porn, but never actually cooking anything. Seems goofy, right?
Right. And so many people read books on entrepreneurship and they don't start businesses, or they read books on personal finance and they don't clean up their mess. They read books on dating and they never ask anybody out. So yeah, I think personal development can become a form of procrastination, because it's exciting to read about this information and visualize implementing it. It's harder to actually go out there and do the work. But I'll tell you what, it's a lot more fulfilling when you make the chicken parm after reading about the ingredients instead of just reading about the ingredients.
What's your opinion on this? This is a slight pivot, but you read a ton. What are your thoughts on like people read a book a week, or like I'm going to read a book every 2 weeks, and it's almost like you're giving yourself a trophy for reading quick. And then I've met other people, Ty Lopez is an example. He preaches to read the exact same book just over and over again. Like he'll read the same book 10 times and he's reading books that were written 50 years ago. He's not reading a lot of the newer books. Because he believes in really understanding the concept. Like there's like a little bit of like cognitive dissonance. Like I want to read a lot, but I want to implement. How do you find that balance and actually ensure that you're a successful reader?
I'm not sure that there is a right answer to this question, but I'll give my perspective. I think when you're first starting out, like if somebody in the audience today is saying, oh, I'm starting to understand the value of these books, maybe I should check them out, I think that person should read for quantity. I think that person should read as many books as possible in as many different areas of personal development and business and health and relationships and philosophy and psychology. I mean, read everything. And as you start to mature in the space and understand it, and you sort of have first principles thinking and you have a good basic foundation to build on, then start to read with precision and more intention. And I think rereading the same book 10 times in a row is fantastic, especially if it's helping you solve a problem that you're dealing with on a daily basis or develop a skill set that you know you need to get to the next level. That's where quality matters more than quantity. But it's tough to identify those things and have good awareness when you're first starting your journey. So it's sort of like a quantity moves into quality over time conversation. That's at least how I think about it.
That makes good sense, because you're not going to become proficient at a skill just by studying it like for a little bit. You need to get a lot of case data. You need to go try different things. When you started, like, did you know even exactly what you're looking for? Like, how do you even find the right book?
Yeah, when I was first starting, there was a pain that I wanted to solve. That was the problem of personal finance and investing, financial literacy. I mean, I was a business student that didn't know anything about money. And so not only did I have a bunch of social anxiety and insecurities, but those things became amplified, I think, in the classroom when those subjects were brought up by high-performance students who, you know, they were leading the investment clubs and things like that, talking about how much money they were going to make after school. And so I'd shrink away. I'd remove myself from those conversations. But after that summer of reading books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, The Richest Man in Babylon by George S. Clason, I went back to school and I was leading those conversations. And so I started to realize that I did have a problem that I needed to solve. And it was reinforced through insecurities and moments that I can remember of it, like intentionally removing myself from conversations to then leading them. I mean, that was a feeling of exhilaration. Anxiety and excitement are very similar. It just depends on framing. So I felt excitement when I got to lead those conversations. So yeah, do a personal inventory. In my book, Rise of the Reader, I have a list of questions that you can go through and ask yourself when thinking about the next book that you're going to read. Like, is there a problem that you're facing on a daily basis that you just can't get rid of? Is there a skill set that you're looking to develop to get to the next level? And what is it? And can you read a book about the world's best at implementing that or executing that? Are you attending an event anytime soon where there's a speaker and you could read their book to get a better understanding of what they're talking about before attending the talk? What are your mentors reading? Sometimes mentors have such a great understanding of the place that you're in because it's almost like a third party perspective, and they can make a more accurate recommendation than one that you could come up with by yourself because they understand your problems better than you do sometimes. So there are all sorts of places to start, I think.
Yeah, a mentor, a peer, a friend might understand your problems. They can give you a little bit of that guidance. And honestly, your book is good guidance, right? Of the Rise of the Reader, alliteration, Rise of the Reader. I loved it because I could feel it reading the words on the page that you were distilling all the stuff you had learned as concise as possible. And that's tremendously valuable in itself. I mean, you're out there reading tens, hundreds, eventually thousands of books, and then distilling it so I don't have to go and read all 1,000 books to understand it. And then the whole second half of the book's just straight like tactics and implementation of numerous ideas. It's kind of a choose your own adventure. So I loved it. And you worked your way up to being able to write the book. Well, when and why did you decide I'm ready to actually write a book? I've read enough and I have something to say.
Well, as people continued to ask me the same questions, how do I choose the right book? How do I take effective notes? How do I implement the material? And that last piece, implementation, I think was the biggest problem that my community was facing. I'd always answer people. I mean, I am of service to my community. I get a lot of fulfillment through making a positive impact. So I'm answering people. I'm sending voice notes. I'm typing stuff out on Instagram DMs. I'm typing emails. I'm even jumping on Zoom calls from time to time. But there were two problems with that. Well, three problems now that I'm saying it out loud. Problem number one was that the medium with which I was communicating with people, like it was sort of limiting. It didn't give me the opportunity to express everything that I wanted to express in my answers. Number two was that I had never taken the time to define what I was doing. Like, what the heck was Nick Hutchison doing to implement books? I mean, I was just doing. I was taking action. I wasn't really thinking about how to communicate and teach that to other people. And then number three, which I really just thought of, is that there's no leverage to that. Answering every single question individually, I mean, why not just give them a book? You know, one time I was interviewing MJ DeMarco, author of The Millionaire Fastlane, and I asked him why he wrote that first book, and he said because whenever somebody would see his Lamborghini at a gas station or a restaurant, they'd come up and they'd say, "How did you get this car? What do you do?" He wanted to hand them a book and say, "This is how you do it." And so I just kind of, I got that feeling of like, I just want to hand people a book and say, "This is how you do it." So that's why I decided to write the book. And I came to that conclusion when a company approached me. They're a referral partner for my digital marketing agency, and they were referring authors to us once the books were done and we were doing some marketing. And they said to me, "Hey, Nick, if you ever want to write a book, we'll comp our self-publishing services in exchange for an ad in the back." So if you want to write a book, you can use our infrastructure, our tools, our team, and we can help you with the process.
Great.
And I said, right immediately, I was like, yeah, I want to write a book, you know, and then I kind of had that idea, the MJ DeMarco moment sort of formulating right at the same time. And so that was 3 years ago. This process has taken me 3 years, just short of 3 years. It was a long process. And like I said before, I think I have a lot more respect for the authors that I work with because it is not easy to write a book. And it's not easy to promote and market a book, even though I have a book marketing agency.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I've started writing, but I haven't completed anything like 99% of writers. Did you ever feel like, maybe I throw in the towel, writing just isn't for me? Or did you not have a moment like that? Did you ever get to that point where you're like, maybe this isn't for me? Or you toughed through it?
I toughed through it. My moment was a little bit different. I had to create some urgency for myself. Mm. I had 80% of the book done for the last 2 years. So the difficult thing for me was finishing the book, forcing myself to finish the book. For some reason, I don't know if it was imposter syndrome or fear of failure. I'm not sure what it was. I could dissect that for a minute, but I just couldn't get myself to finish the book. Other things continued to take priority and I made excuses. And so every time I would answer one of those questions though, and I would be reminded that A, I wasn't giving my best effort in the answer. B, I still hadn't taken the time to fully define everything in a way that I could communicate it. And C, it didn't have leverage. I was wasting my time answering the same questions for the 1,000th time, taking a half an hour to answer every single one of them. It would remind me to finish the book. So I leveraged Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law essentially states for tasks that if you give yourself a deadline, you'll get it done, right? A task will expand to fill the allotted time that you give it. Just like if you think back to doing homework in middle school or high school, you'd get your homework done the night before it's due, right? So I gave myself a date. I said, November 1st, that's when I want to put this book out. And I picked that date 6 months ago. Said November 1st. And then what do you know? The last 20% of the book was finished very quickly. Wow. So that's what my process was like and some of the struggles that I faced.
Parkinson's Law, you said it. You did it. How does it feel? I know you're like, you're just publishing and just promoting and launching this baby. Has it hit you yet that this is a real thing?
It has, because I have my first physical copies of the book. I'll tell you what, I never had, you'll hear some authors talk about the moment that they first unbox their books and they start crying. And I didn't have that moment. I think it's because impact is felt through feedback. And I'm waiting to hear some of the feedback that people have. I am sure that this book will provide positive value to those that choose to read it. For example, that intention example that I gave us on the show earlier, there's dozens of strategies just like that. I mean, you know it, you've read it. But I'm waiting for the feedback. I think that's when it's going to hit me. I'm still in this kind of like numb state of, okay, yeah, it's here, but is it really here yet? You know?
I'll give you one piece of feedback that I loved. And I don't even know how it'll go in terms of marketing it, but the fact that the final third of the book, each page is a new actionable, implementable insight with a quote, like action plan straight to the point. And it was a lot of ideas from like health to personal growth to relationships. I liked it because it was kind of a choose your own adventure that you could kind of just scroll through. If you feel like you already mastered something, you could find a topic that you maybe haven't mastered and learn a little bit more. What I'd be curious to see is from those pages in the back, which ones hit, which ones really resonate with the most amount of people. And then if maybe you have a whole new chapter or a whole new book around that topic, have you thought about that at all? But that's what I was thinking when I was reading it.
Yeah. You know, there are a number of reasons that I decided to put that section in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite books of all time is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And some of the criticism around that book is that it's not realistic to implement. People say, hey, I appreciate the information, Tim, but we can't build these big remote businesses and design our own lives. Like, thank you. But here's the thing. I implemented that book. I mean, every single page. Wow. And it's created the life that I live today, which I really enjoy. And so I wanted to show people through those 100 plus healthy, wealthy, and happy habits that you can implement what you read. And here are all the things I've implemented. And I document some of the struggles and like little pro tips and hacks and stuff like that. So it was almost proof that reading and implementing personal development books does work.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to really like hammer home that action piece. But I think it will be really interesting to hear what people choose to implement. The second reason that I included it in there is that unfortunately, there is a game that a lot of authors play, which is, I just want to sell a bunch of books. And then it ends there because the book isn't good enough to create any word of mouth virality.
Right.
And so I started to think about, what books do I talk about the most? I mean, they're the books that were the most actionable, that I've implemented, that changed my behavior, that people noticed and they asked about. And then I recommend the book. And then each book that you sell turns into more books. And so I wanted to create as much potential change as possible. So if somebody buys a 1 gallon water bottle and they start walking around with it and people say, hey, why are you reading that? And then they go, well, did you know that 80% of people are chronically dehydrated? I read about it in the Rise of the Reader. Then, it just creates that word of mouth momentum. So I baked in over 100 opportunities, I think, for that to happen.
I love it. You were just kind of scrolling through the book a second ago. For anyone watching, they might have saw that. Pick up the book again. Let's do this. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I kind of want to go towards the back and you can choose. I want to
I'll pick a random page. That's EndNotes.
Yeah, take your time if you don't. I just want to use one of these pages as an example of what that page looks like and the simplicity, but really the value in each of those quick tip pages.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. There are so many. Let me find really one that I'm excited. There really is so many.
I'll be the first one to admit, I chose my own adventure. Some of them I felt like I was already pretty proficient in, and I skipped those. But then others I read 3 times in a row to really, understand it better. So yeah, it's fun.
Here's a tough one for people. It's Forgive. Forgive. So this is under the Happy Habits section. And I'll read it to – do you want me to read it to everybody?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. We're just having fun, man. Let's read it.
Yeah. Okay. So Forgive. Each one of these sections in the back has a why, then my experience, pro tip, and a quote. So I'll read it. There are 2 types of forgiveness, internal and external. Internal forgiveness happens when you stop feeling angry or resentful towards yourself. Whereas external forgiveness happens when you stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone else. Both are extremely important habits to engage in. In The 4 Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, I learned that humans are the only animals on the planet that can pay for the same mistake more than once. We call it regret. You do something once in reality and then relive it in your head over and over, even when others have moved on. By starting to forgive yourself more, you can drop the weight you're carrying from mistakes you've made in the past. One common way to remove this emotional baggage is writing a letter to yourself, where you detail what happened, why it happened, and how you've chosen to move forward in a better way. After you've written it down on paper, burn it, and you'll feel the weight lift away, which is a fun thing to do. For external forgiveness, it's a bit simpler. First, create a list of those you currently resent. Then, pick up your phone and call the first person on the list. And this is scary, and I've done it, but I think everybody should. Let them know you're currently working through this book, and an author is having you confront your pain. Tell them why you feel the way that you do. Even if they don't feel they've done you wrong, it's important for you to verbalize the fact that you forgive them. Although simple, this step is incredibly difficult, awkward, and requires quite a bit of willpower. Once you've worked your way through the list, you'll feel like an entirely new person. So that's the why. My experience. I read about an external forgiveness exercise like the one I just mentioned in Vishen Lakhiani's book, Code to the Extraordinary Mind. I was feeling ready, so I dialed up some old friends and explained the situation. Each of them received the information well, and it felt like the resentment I was holding on to instantly disappeared. What an incredibly happy feeling it left me with. Remember, this is a happy habit. Pro tip. Now, I understand how much resentment weighs on my emotional well-being. I forgive myself and others instantly. At the end of the day, we're all just human beings trying to live our best life and navigate the world. Life is hard enough as it is. Don't make it harder on yourself by punishing yourself or others for simple mistakes. And then the quote at the end says, unforgiveness is like drinking poison yourself and waiting for the other person to die. It's a quote by Marianne Williamson, author of A Return to Love. So that's an example of one of the happy habits that I have in the book.
That hits hard, Nick. I need to I need to implement. I need to make that phone call myself. And
it's not easy.
I'm at a loss of words because you're the first person to ever do a live reading on the podcast. I think that's pretty cool, man.
That was cool. I have not done that either.
That's the first reading of Rise of the Reader?
Yes, it is.
As you heard it here first, man. I'm happy you ran with it with me. And that was just a page in a whole freaking a collection of stories and examples just like that.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that we know, like forgive people, right? If you don't forgive people, it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person's going to get sick. You're the only one holding on to that resentment. We all know that. But sometimes you need to be reminded of it. And then you need somebody to tell you how to overcome it. And I think calling those people, building a list, telling them that you're reading the book and calling them gives you the excuse to take the action that you know you should be taking, but you haven't done yet. And that's what books do for me. They remind me of the actions that I'm supposed to take. Some of these things are basic. They're foundational, but they're really helpful. And I give you permission. You know, I give everybody permission. Go out there and do it.
Important question here. Does it have to be a phone call? Does it have to be a phone call? I think people at home, someone might be nervous.
Yeah, you could probably write a letter, write a text message. But
even more scary for me.
I think seeing somebody's reaction.
Yeah.
So I remember doing this for the first time after reading Vishen's book.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of people in my life that I had some resentment for. So I remember looking at that one of their names in my contact list. His name is Mark. And I remember looking at Mark's name and I thought, man, he doesn't want to hear from me. And I really don't want to talk to him, but let me just press dial. So I dialed and my heart's beating like crazy. My palms are probably sweaty. And he answers. And I just said, hey, this is uncomfortable, but do you have a couple of minutes? I want to talk about something. Sure. What's going on? Well, I'm reading this book and it's asking me to call people and forgive them. And I don't know if you remember this, but blah, 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 blah. And I've been holding on to it and it bothers me. And so I wanted to just say that I forgive you. And he just said, you know what? I've been holding on to a similar feeling and I forgive you.
Wow.
Well, wow. I didn't know he was regretting something too or holding on to something. And so there we had it. Like the veil was lifted. And then I just got into a groove. I mean, I only had a few people to call on that list, but I felt like $1 million that night.
Did any of the conversations not go well? And from my just outside perspective, I'm thinking even if I lift the veil and I pull myself in a vulnerable, if they don't accept my vulnerability, we can move on and I still did the right thing. But you nodded no. It sounds like all the conversations went well.
They did. I think it's important to give them an opportunity to release the feeling. Mm. Which is why I think a phone call is useful. Mm-hmm. It's easy to ignore a text message or ignore a Facebook DM or something like that, but it's not so easy to ignore a phone call.
Right.
And yeah, you know what? It feels good to be the person doing the right thing too. And that's okay. I think it's okay. It feels good to be the one to initiate that conversation.
You know, I didn't even know I needed this conversation right now, Nick. There's someone that I'm not going to give details, but recently did something poor to a friend of mine and basically apologized to her, but I'm still kind of mad with him. I'm going to have that conversation. I didn't even do anything wrong. He pissed off someone who's close to me, but those conversations need to be had, right?
Yeah, it does nobody any good having that negative energy out there. And it feels, you've heard the metaphor before, it feels like you're carrying around a backpack or something.
Yeah.
And you can just let it go.
Yeah. A good friend and mentor of mine talks about wearing armor, and your armor, you're guarded. It's vulnerable to take your armor off, but when you're wearing it, it's heavy, you're guarded, you're blocking your heart. Sometimes you just got to unveil it and be real with people.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I'm happy that I picked that random page.
Yeah, thanks for having
a
moment with me, brother. It was perfect.
Yeah, of course. And listen, that's what I'm talking about, word of mouth potential, because you might call somebody up and say, hey, I had that conversation and here's how it went. And they might say, why'd you feel like calling? And you might go, Rise of the Reader, you know? So that's just Just a little book marketing tip for everybody. That's how you create impact. And then that impact helps you promote your message a little bit more.
Yeah. And another book marketing tip, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I noticed you do have embedded call to actions. Like if you're gaining value from this, do share it with a friend, do support us in our community. And some people, like, they don't want to shine their light. They don't want to sound salesy or markety, but I think it's important that you embed those small call to action just to remind someone that if they're gaining value, they can share it and someone else will as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Being the person that recommends something of value to somebody else, they attribute the value to you, right? Mm. So I try to let people know, like, if you gift this book to other people and they're positively impacted by it, they're not going to give the credit to me. I'm just an anonymous writer, right? They're going to give the credit to you, the person that gifted the book. So I have a call to action around that. And then I also ask for reviews. You know, if you found value, put a review there. That will help the platform, Amazon, for the most part, share it with more people. And you're going to help other people discover the book. Like play a role in that discovery process. It's good karma. And so, yeah, a couple of those in there. And hopefully that generates some additional reviews and books that are sold.
I won't be mad if the listener at home leaves me a review for bringing Nick on the show. I'd appreciate that, obviously. But realistically, we're going to go to the rapid fire round in just a second. But we've talked about the book quite a bit. Where do we get it? Obviously, Amazon.com is a good place. Or where do you want to send us?
Yeah, Amazon is perfect. I'm trying to compound all of my momentum within their platform because they sell the most books. But it's also available in almost every online retailer and a bunch of small bookstores and stuff like that. You can also DM me at BookThinkers on Instagram, and I can always point you in the right direction.
Love it. And my show notes writer is a king. That's in the notes. It's in the description. It's also a DM away if you want to message me and you'd like a personal introduction to Nick and his team. We can do it that way as well. Nick, the rapid fire round, this is just random spur of the moment questions. They're kind of random, but they're things that we didn't touch on completely yet. And I want to ask you.
All right, I'm ready.
We talked a lot about books. We talked a lot about some of the ones you've learned from, but do you have a go-to book, or you can name a few, that you like to gift to members of your community? Like, what are your go-to books? This is a Tim Ferriss question, actually. What is your go-to book that you like to gift to a friend or a peer?
The two books that I've gifted the most over the last couple of years are A, Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. This book is about getting the most out of your life. It's about experiential living, creating memories. It's a fantastic read. Book number two is I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. It's a book on personal finances and investing, financial literacy, money. That book is great if you're in the U.S. It's not so great elsewhere because there are a lot of U.S.-specific examples. But those are the two books that I think I gift the most.
Love that. Love that. I often ask people, dinner table, invite three people alive or dead, but I want to change that question up. So three writers, if you could, probably they're dead because they're not publishing more anymore. If you could take an author that is done publishing entirely and somehow bring them back to writing to get them to publish, him or her to publish a new book, what authors would you want to publish something new? What authors do we need in 2024? It's a very weird question.
Number one, Marcus Aurelius. Mm. His journal Meditations was a very important read for me. Marcus is known as a philosopher king and one of the pivotal pillars of Stoicism, a very actionable philosophy that started in ancient Greece and then moved to ancient Rome. And Marcus was a big proponent of Stoicism. And you know what's so funny is you think back almost 2,000 years ago, he was writing about some of the same problems that we face today. Right. I mean, here's one of the most powerful men on the planet writing about how hard it was to get out of bed and do his work and things like that. So I'd love to have him step into 2024 and see what he thinks about the world that we're living in. That would be pretty interesting.
I love that answer. Do you have any more? I'm putting you on the spot, but do you have any more that you'd love to bring back to life?
I mean, yes. This might be a little bit of a cheap answer, but yeah. I am such a big fan of Stoicism. I'd bring back a few other Stoic philosophers. Mm. I'd like to bring back Seneca. Mm. Seneca wrote a lot about the concept of death. He had this little journal called On the Shortness of Life. And I'm fascinated with death as a subject. I think a lot about death. I have a memento mori, which means remember you're going to die, tattooed on my chest. Right. I think it helps create good action. And he has a famous quote. It's something like, you know, it's not that we don't have enough time to live. It's that we waste our time or something like that. And yeah. And then I'll pick another Stoic philosopher. Let's pick Epictetus. So imagine having dinner with those three. That would be a fantastic conversation.
It truly would. I'd be doing no talking. I would just be there to ask a couple questions and listen. That would be fantastic. Yeah,
I'd probably have to wear the Google Translate headphones because I don't think they'd speak English, but that's fair, okay.
Fair, yeah. Hey, it's Google Translate. It makes life easier nowadays. I just random questions, not even on my list, but I've said makes life easier. What technology that's super cheap, super easy to obtain has made your life so much easier in the past year?
I use a CRM tool, customer relationship management tool, called Less Annoying CRM. Because it is, yeah. I was using some very complicated softwares for my sales team and for my own relationship management note-taking, Salesforce, HubSpot, some of the more traditional platforms. Yeah. And then I literally was Googling something like a less annoying CRM and it popped up and I got into the platform and it was exactly what I need. And I have no idea how much it costs, $15 a month per seat or something like that. But it's been a lifesaver as far as task management and follow-up and stuff goes.
Oh my, I got to check that out. Less annoying CRM, and whether it's 15 or 50, if that can drive revenue in your business, it's just a no brainer investment. So interesting recommendation. I'll check that out, brother. Dude, it's been fun. I appreciate it. I know you're launching a book. You're doing a lot of speaking. You're bringing on big guests. I appreciate you taking time, investing it in me and my community here. So tell us once again how we can continue to support you.
I will. And before I do, I'll also add, because gratitude is a big theme in my book, in my life, that I'm grateful for you. You're a wonderful podcast host. You asked great questions. You're very engaging. I enjoy the calming presence that you bring to the conversation and sort of the nature of your voice and your mind. So thank you. I'm grateful for you and really nice to bump into you a couple of months ago, or maybe even it was about a month ago. And now we're here having this conversation. So thank you so much. And for people that want to connect with me, I love providing custom book recommendations. It's one of my favorite things to be a book matchmaker. So DM me at BookThinkers on Instagram. Tell me about a problem you just can't get rid of. Tell me about a skill set that you want to obtain that you just are having a tough time with. And I'll provide a custom book recommendation to you. And then from there, there are links in our bio on Instagram for everything that you need.
Love it. Hey, we got started with this episode. Your podcast is fantastic. The YouTube channel, the book's great. And wow, like personalized recommendations for books. We started with this. How do I know what to read? You and your team can help us decide what the next best read is. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity today.
You might be the only person that's more calm than me. I love it, man. No, I do appreciate your energy and we'll do it again. Congratulations, man. And we'll talk soon. Thanks, Nick.